The Lonely Gal.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Lonely Gal podcast. My name is Judy Wong, and I'm your guide on this journey. So today's guest, we have the lovely Colm Doolin. Colm Doolin is a podcaster like myself. He's been doing it for many years, and a guy who is about to bare his soul on his struggles with alcohol and drugs, and will give you a huge amount of hope in his own words. Today's podcast is brought to you in association with Graco Studios, based in Finglas, Dublin. They offer a hybrid solution for video, photography and podcasting. For more information, please check out their website at gracostudios.com. Well, welcome, Colm Doolin. How are you doing, my friend?
Judy, I am mighty. Thanks for having us on the podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks for being here, because I know you've had a busy schedule, so I appreciate your time.
I stopped over on the way and got a little sauna and ice bath in Clontarf. The north side is starting to grow on me. You know that?
Are you from the north side?
No, I'm Dunleary. I sound like I'm from the north side, though.
No, you don't sound like that. You sound absolutely from Dunleary. You do, totally. Don't be silly. I am so happy to have you on board, because I got a chance to chat to you on the phone before we've recorded. And so many things that you said just completely blew my mind. We're talking about loneliness, because that's my podcast, The Lonely Gal. Tell me a little bit about your journey from where you are now, but what has happened before to kind of get you here.
Well, I suppose my journey in terms of I'm sober, I'm an athlete, you know, I love nature, I love training, but I think I discovered all them things through pain.
Okay.
And I think the universe has a great way of using pain and struggle as a way of pushing us towards our authentic path and our authentic selves. You know what I mean? And I was saying to you before, Leonard Cohen is that quote, there's a crack in everything. Mm-hmm. That's how the light gets in. Mm-hmm. And looking back to my life, I think I always had this innate feeling of fear and anxiety and just this imposter syndrome where I just didn't feel part of. I just always felt that I was on the outside of the circle, mm-hmm.
And that you didn't fit in.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like I fit in. I was an authentic pretender, a legit phony that used to just morph into the crowd I was in to be accepted. I was like the Dave Attenborough of people. I just observe people and see what normal is and try and pretend to be normal. And then, from a young age, then I always found stuff externally to help me to fill that gap within me. You know what I mean? That's if I get the external thing, I feel enough. I remember when I was a kid and in my school, everyone got mad into football stickers. Mm-hmm. So I got the sticker book thinking, if I get all the stickers collected, then I'll be accepted and people in the class will like me and think I'm cool. And I got so obsessed with getting all these stickers. I remember begging my ma to get me stickers or give me money, and then going to these big seminars to get all the sticker books and then I had everything collected and going into the class thinking it was great. Yeah. And then when I showed them all the stickers I had, they were like, oh, Colin, we're into Pokemon now, bro.
Moves very fast.
Can't keep up, man.
Yeah.
Sorry, teacher.
My God. But, so acceptance is really important for you.
Yeah, acceptance. And then as I got older, it was sitting around the field with the lads and someone whipped out a bottle of Baileys.
Yeah.
And they were handing it around. I remember them handing it to me and saying, do you want to try a sup of this? And I was like, I don't know, because my dad was an alcoholic, so I didn't want to delve into that the ice cream tastes lovely. I remember taking the soap out of it and it was disgusting and burned the back of my throat. I said, that's horrible. And then it done around the group of lads, the little circle we were in, and it came back to me. I remember taking the second soap out of it and then I just felt incredible. Mm. Something that I don't know what it was, but that drink just lifted me out of whatever depth of loneliness I was in. Alcohol filled that void. Mm-hmm. And it just gave me this confidence. I could talk to the people, I could have the chats. I just felt okay. I went from feeling like an armpit to Brad Pitt, what I mean? And it's just, and then I just found that wow, this was the cause, this was the the cure for that feeling of like loneliness I was feeling.
And what age did that start? Like, I was that 14. Feeling? 14.
I was 14. I was feeling loneliness long before I even understood what it was.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of young men feel that more so? Because it's such a transient stage. Like 14 is, you're not quite young, but you're not quite the adult yet. Mm. So you're transitioning and your body's transitioning. Like, did you feel like, you probably didn't feel like super connected to who you were then?
I think it's really hard when you're that age, you're growing up, and yeah, there's so many different trends and so many circles, and you're just so like dependent on fitting in and being accepted.
Yeah.
And that's all it's all about when you're that age. You just really want to be liked, you just really want to be accepted, and you go to any lengths just to be part of, and you don't want to stand out, like, you know. And
yeah,
and that's something that, like, when I was that age, when I was 14, and you know, so like I learned from that age that you know, massive pressure on kid. Even now, like, I was lucky back then, there was like no Instagram, or like back in my day I only had Bebo, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, good old Bebo.
Good old Bebo, send me a love. And and now it's a lot different, like, you know what I mean? There's just constant information, how, like, the whole narrative of how you should look and what you should have. And you know, you're talking about loneliness, and I think even today there's this societal shopping list that if you're a certain age and you haven't got the mortgage and you haven't got the wife and you haven't got the kids or you haven't got the husband, you're failing, you're not worthy as a human, you're failing, and you need to get out and get these things. And I think that can drive a lot of loneliness as well, that, you know, it's like, I think I'm missing something, and if I get the thing, then that will fix what I need. And what I learned today is that loneliness is an inside job. Like, loneliness, like Andy DeMello says it, like, there's a difference between attachment and loneliness, you know. And if you like who you are, you never feel alone. Because I've been in intimate relationships and felt extremely lonely. I've been surrounded by friends, I felt extremely lonely because I was so unauthentic. You know, I was hiding behind masks, again, looking to be accepted, looking to be liked. And I was extremely lonely because I was being so fake. And it was exhausting when you're constantly hiding behind this act and facade to try just fit in, because you're so, you have this belief that if they see the real me, they won't like who I am. If they see the kid with the shitty sticker book or the kid without the drink, they won't like who I am. And I grew up with that belief as an adult, you know. And when I got sober then, you know, I slowly started to realise what the cure for loneliness was. You know, I was making that journey from your head to your heart.
Yeah.
Because when we're in our heads, we're just criticising, we're living in perfectionism, we're setting unrealistic standards and goals. For, I should look like this, I should have this much money, I should be driving this car, I should have a marriage, I should have this many kids, you know, I should have a mortgage, you know. We're setting these standards of perfectionism for ourselves, and we don't have them. We absolutely annihilate ourselves. We absolutely beat ourselves up to the ground. You know, and we can love and accept and show compassion to the whole world, but we struggle to bring it inwards. We struggle to accept ourselves, have compassion for ourselves, let ourselves off the hook, you know.
Was that journey for, like, getting to know yourself really hard? Because I know personally, I could definitely say to you honestly that there was one point in my life I looked in the mirror and I said, no, I don't love you. Do I even barely like you? Like, it took years. How was that for you?
Yeah, for me, I never sat in myself my whole life, because I never sat with any feelings. Every time I felt something, there was an act I could do to numb it. If I felt something, I'd take a drink. If I felt something, I'd eat something. If I felt something, I'd date someone. If I felt something, I'd snort something. If I felt something, there was always, if I felt A, I'll do B. Because I didn't want to sit with Colm. I didn't want to get to know Colm. I didn't want to feel my emotions or my feelings. You know, and getting to know myself, it was abstinence and from anything I can escape into, and just sitting with them feelings. And even today, in this day and age, we live in a society where we're constantly distracted.
Yeah.
We've Instagram, you know, we've Netflix, we've laptops, we've phones, we've food, we've drink, we're Deliveroo. You know, we've these things that are so instantly in front of us that we never get the opportunity to sit with ourselves. You know, and you're talking about looking in the mirror, and it's like, I look in the mirror and I said, geez, I don't look like fucking Tom Hardy. She looks in the mirror and she doesn't look like Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
So we're not good people because we don't look a certain way. But why are we measuring our value and our worth on how we look or by what age we are, or, you know, what fucking, you know, the amount of money that we have? Or, like, we have these, where do we come up with these markers or these gauges for our self-worth? in life, you know what I mean? And that's the thing, if we can change that, you know, Wayne Dyer has that quote, you know, if I change the way I look at things, the things I look at change. You know what I mean? And if I stop looking at myself saying, I don't look like this, I'm a bad person, you know, that's not how we should view ourselves or gauge ourselves or how worthy we are in this planet. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a good person, you know, if you're adding a bit of light out there, did you help someone today? Did you add to someone's life? You know, I think that's the important bit, not to be saying, I don't look like this, or I don't have this much money, so I'm a piece of crap. You know, no, it's like, how do I add a bit of light to life today?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, and again, I think you can have a poor mindset and a rich mindset, and it's got nothing to do with the amount of possessions that you own or attain. You know, you have a poor mindset, you could have £1 billion in the bank and it's never enough because you constantly need more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And the problem is someone feels that loneliness and they're throwing all sorts of things at it. You know what I mean? If we get money, if we get car, if we get the fucking hair transplant, you know, if we get the teeth done, if we get A, B or C, it will take away the loneliness, but it won't even scratch the surface.
Yeah.
Because it's like that. It's that journey from your head to your heart and learning to accept yourself and like with yourself. And the hardest thing to do that is to sit with yourself. And I honestly didn't sit with myself till over lockdown. Mm. I remember lockdown got me in a really dark place. Really dark place. So much so that I just needed to get away.
Mm.
You know, and I remember, you know, talking to a lad about camping. And I said, yeah. I remember packing on my own, put a tent in the back of my car and I drove down to Cork, just a random spot, the Bear Peninsula in the back arse of nowhere, and set up a tent. I was just sitting there in my tent and it was beautiful. You know, I became best mates with nature. You know, when someone says to me about spirituality and God and what does it all mean, and you know, for me, God is the great outdoors. And I remember sitting there and next thing I'd meet some guy who's chatting away to him and he said, I'm volunteering down this monastery, this Buddhist monastery, but it doesn't bear it, down in the Castletown bear it.
Yeah.
Trying to come down for the cup of tea. And I kept went down and I got chatting to all these monks and all. They said, look, if you want somewhere to, you know, if you want some food, somewhere to stay, you know, and do a bit of walk around the monastery. I was like, yeah. So I started doing that and they stayed there for a few weeks. And then I got talking to a guy that owns an animal sanctuary up the road. And he was like, yeah, if you want to help out around the farm, we'll put you up feed you for a few weeks. I said, yeah. You know, we met him. And then, you know, then I met other people. And I just went on this mad journey. And I came back with this whole different perspective and outlook on life. And it's a different way of viewing myself as well. Because before that, I had this materialistic vision of what it is to be a good person or a good human being. So if I attain all this stuff. You know, and then I realised that richness of mind is appreciating what you have and the simple things and grateful for the simple things. You know what I mean? Like, the grateful people are the happiest people in me. Because I used to go to bed at night saying, I want the relationship, I want the job, I want the money, I want the care. And it was so many things that was missing in my life. And now I go to bed at night saying, I have of good health, of a family that love me.
Yeah,
you know, of an abundance in nature, you know, of peace of mind. I like who I am. You know, I have so much richness in my life today.
Do you like who you are or do you love who you are?
I like who I am, you know, and I think you can get real, like, I don't know, you can get all these buzzwords out there, like you have to hug yourself in front of the mirror and light a bubble bath and light a couple of candles and, you know.
Not for you.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it depends, like, I don't think it depends on the words that you say. I think it's about how you talk to yourself in your head. Like that inner narrative, that inner critic in your head. If he's running the show, you're not loving yourself.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can learn to let yourself off the hook, because we have that good angel and a bad angel within us. We have this inner critic that can absolutely tear us apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like, geez, you're getting old, or geez, you're putting on weight, or Jesus, you know, your man next door has a much nicer car than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we listen to this little voice in our head and this critic, like, hey, your boss thinks you're an idiot, you know? And but it's just that inner voice. And, you know, if you can learn to
train
it. Yeah, not even train it, but just say, look, I'm good enough. You know what I mean? And have that little mantra. And, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, I was in Thailand doing a Muay Thai competition. You know, and again, I was trying to play this character. I was the fighter, the hard man, and, you know, competing. And I remember the third fight I had, I got absolutely battered. And I remember going back to this hostel I was staying in Thailand, and my dad passed away about 2 months prior to this. And my way of dealing with that was I was just a pure workaholic. And at the time I was working in a job that was highly stressful, but it was somewhere I could escape into, that I didn't need to feel life. And I put down the drink, you know, I put down the football stickers.
But then it was
the work. Then it was the job. It was always something external that I could fall into. And if it wasn't that, it was a relationship. And then I was in a relationship a few months prior to that, and that broke down. So I got even more into work. So I didn't want to feel my feelings.
Yeah.
This relationship that broke down and the loneliness and whatnot. And then I remember just on the verge of having a breakdown again. And, you know, and I decided to book this trip to Thailand. Because I'm a fighter now. I want to be the fighter guy. That's the archetype I'm playing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this third fight. I got broke up. And I never cried when my dad passed away. And I remember... this hostel looked at myself in the mirror and just seen my face broke up, and I just started bawling my eyes out for the first time. It was just like all this stuff I had built up, all this emotion that was suppressed and thrown in the backseat.
Yeah.
Just all came out. And
how did you feel afterwards? A relief?
Free. Relief.
Yeah.
I could take the mask off. You know, I was feeling for the first time in the world. You know, feeling it. And it's just, I saw the grime on the way in, and, you know, and we like not to be afraid to feel our feelings, because it's not like a light switch where you can turn it off. If you are heartbroken, or you feel lonely or anxious or fearful or whatever the emotion is, that there's not just a light switch you can hit to turn it off, you know. And if a friend of mine, he's a Gaeltacht, and he says in Irish, when you're talking about like you feel anxious or you're angry, you just say anger is on me. A loneliness is on me, that it's not you. I am not lonely. I am not angry. I am not sad. It's just on me. This dandruff is just on me. You know, this stain is just on me. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like how we experience our emotions. And I remember in the hostel having that cry, and then, you know, and then I met this person, and you know, he had a chat with me, and you know, he kind of said, look, he's over there. We're on different journeys. I was doing the fighting thing, he was doing the Buddhist meditation thing, and he was like over there learning about Buddhism, and didn't want to come to the spirit work workshop. And I was like a bit reluctant, but I said okay. So I got to this workshop, and you know, it's a circle of people breathing, and you know, he says, you know, he introduced me to the head monk. He was an ex military dude from the UK, and he had this like double life, you know, like similar to mine. You know, mine used was partying, and then it was this, and his one was like just in the wars, and then he kind of got into gangs, and you know, then he just kind of found himself in the darkness, and he just decided to come to Thailand and become a monk, like, you know, big change. But I remember having a chat with him and telling him the story of my life, and you know, he said, Colin, you're way too hard on yourself. You know, you're trying to prove yourself to people. Am I good enough now? Am I good enough now? Am I good enough now? He said, Colin, you are good enough regardless. You know, to have that little mantra. And still to this day, you know, there's some time about that good voice and that bad voice.
Yeah.
When that bad voice is kicking off and I'm sitting in my job and I feel like I'm an imposter, I don't belong here, I'm going to get fired today, you know, or, so, you know, I'm not good enough, or blah, blah, blah. It's that little mantra in my head, just say, look, I am good enough regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you feel in your head, you're going through a heartbreak, or, you know, you're going through a breakup and you feel like you're a piece of shit, whatever it is, just say, look, I'm good enough regardless. And it's the hardest thing to say, I am enough, you know, because we live in a society where, like, social media is constantly telling us we're not enough.
Yeah.
I look at social media and I see someone that has white teeth or big head of hair or nice car or whatever, and I say, I haven't got that stuff, so I'm not enough. So straight away that becomes a marker of what we should be, you know. And and then like that, and the funny thing is, like when I went over lockdown, when I went on that journey down camping around Ireland, you know, what provoked me to do that was I was in a really dark and painful place. And then the trip to Thailand provoked me to do that. I was in a really dark and lonely place.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting sober, what led me to go and getting help for the way I was drinking, I was in a really dark and lonely place. So pain is a great motivator. Loneliness is a great motivator. You know, like, them breakups and breakdowns lead to breakthroughs.
The breakthroughs, yeah. Wow. Yeah,
you know, and it's like that. You go through a breakup, you're heartbroken, and you're like, you have a choice. You can sink or swim. Like, you can, it's like if you're on holidays and you're walking across the beach and that sand is so hot that you can't just stand there and let it burn.
Yeah.
You're gonna, that's gonna, that sand's gonna either entice you to run to the water to cool down or run to the shade.
Mm-hmm.
And similar when we're going through pain, you know, I've seen people change their lives. I've seen people go through that pain, deeply lonely, close to the edge.
Yeah.
They're in that storm and they're saying, right, what's the next right thing I can do here? You know, people saying, I'm gonna go on a solo backpacking trip. You know, I've always wanted to do that and I never did. I'm gonna do it now, you know, or I'm gonna actually go and write that book, you know, or I'm gonna do that 10K run I wanted to do. I'm gonna, you know, go on that hike. I'm gonna, you know, and it's just this, like, they get this little insight into how transient life is, you know, and how, you know, everything is, everything's impermanent, you know, and we get little insight saying, right, what can I do? You know, and I see people come to best, that pain can push them on to be great people. And I think that's the beautiful thing about life, is that the pain and the darkness are great motivators to push us onto the right path. It's like that bit of wind for a kite, you know. Or
so you're saying we should embrace it.
Embrace it, but, but what else is the alternative? What's the opposite of embrace?
Yeah, that's true. The opposite would be 9 feet under.
Well, do you avoid it or do you embrace it? Do you keep suppressing it and numbing it down? You know?
Yeah. No, I really, I totally resonate with you in terms of struggle, because I don't think I would be where I'm at if I didn't have the struggle in my life to get me to where I'm at now. But the learning curve, I think it connects you with people more. I think you see people as more human, because you realise now you're not the only one. You're not that special, that in that moment where you feel like, you know, you're going through the struggle, you're going through your pain, anxiety, or the depression, that you're the only one in the world feeling it. Like, in my head, I know other people are experiencing it. The difference is how do you get through it? Or are you strong enough? Are you strong enough to kind of, like you said earlier on about, like, pushing through? Are you like,
I don't believe there's ever such thing as a self-made man. I don't think, like, we could ever get through anything on our own.
Yeah,
I think it's the hardest thing I've ever asked for in my life was help, but it's the greatest thing I've ever done. And like that, depression, loneliness, addiction, I can tell you you have this terminal uniqueness that you're the only one experiencing these feelings. Yeah. You know, we did this chat before the podcast started about, you know, superficial conversations. And sometimes it's like when we actually open up and talk to other people and see what's actually going on in our lives, we get the insight into, yeah, I'm not the only one that experiences this. You know, I'm not the only one that feels this way. You know what I mean? And that's like when you can have these real conversations and you're out there with it. You know, some people are like they're putting on the, you know, I heard a lady say recently, you know, she felt like Brown Thomas on the outside and Tesco on the inside. And it's we're constantly living Brown Thomas on the outside and terrified anyone might find out what's going on the inside. And I grew up in that typical Irish home where, you know, I came from a perfectly normal, dysfunctional family where it was madness inside the house. But all the neighbours from the outside, we looked, everything was great. I mean, you know, everything looked normal and everything was fine. But on the inside of the house, it was highly dysfunctional and mad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you grow up and you internalise that as a kid. You're kind of say, oh, okay, so once I can convince everyone on the outside that I'm happy and everything's going great and everything's good, then what's going on just on the inside doesn't really matter. The engine's coming on, the light in the car is coming on to fix the engine, but smoke coming out, but sure, I'll bring the car for a car wash. You know, it's the same way, how we're feeling internally, you know, And I think when you get to that place again where you're dark enough or you're lonely enough or you're struggling enough or you're painful enough, that you reach out and you talk to someone and you know, and you realise that a lot of people are going through similar situations. And 100%, we're not going to promote it on like Instagram because, again, that's that thing where you want people to see the Brown Thomas, you know, people to see the Tesco. And sorry, no disrespect to Tesco, but what I'm saying is that we don't want people to see the dark side of us, you know, Pink Floyd of the name of the album, Dark Side of the Moon. And we all have that dark side. We all have that shadow side. You know what I mean? We're going to feel down. We're going to feel low. And like we were saying earlier on about embracing it, like we haven't got a choice because it's still a feeling
yeah.
that we can't just press a button to switch off. You know, if you feel it, and you know, sometimes a little signal to say, right, what is this feeling trying to tell me? You know, and you know, I believe loneliness has nothing to do with another person.
Mm.
You know, and again, Anthony DeMello, that thing about attachment, that we get attached emotionally, that I didn't love her, but I loved how she made me feel. When I was with her, I got all this serotonin, I got this attachment, I got this like codependency. But was it love? You know, when you have the question, like love's all about deflating the ego, you know, putting the other person first. It's not about what I can get out of it, what can I put into it? You know what I mean? Yeah. Unconditional love. And you want to learn what love is, like get a dog. And see how a dog loves you unconditionally. Yeah. Dogs are the most loving animals ever. Mm-hmm. They'll love you unconditionally. And it's like, I'm with this girl and I love her. Well, hold on now. I love her when she tells me what I want to hear, when mm-hmm. she texts me back within a certain time, you know, when she's not nagging me or annoying me and mm-hmm. she's doing everything I want her to do. So, man, that's not love. That's a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and we could grow up in a certain household or see how dysfunctional our parents' love was. And then all of a sudden, love is subjective. Like, love is, oh, if I can buy you clothes and, you know, put food on the table, then I'm loving you. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And then someone else's love is like, yo, you didn't text me back in 2 minutes. What's going on? You don't love me anymore. And, you know, and we get this very toxic, unhealthy view of what love is. You know, where love is, like, again, like unconditional. Like, I love you regardless, you know. Mm-hmm. I am good enough regardless. And I think, again, we have to, before we can truly love someone, we have to learn to come back and love ourselves or like ourselves, whatever way you want to phrase it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
But I think that's important for me. And again, I'd be quite a spiritual person. I'm not sure like religion or anything like that, but you know, I meditate a lot. I get in the sea a lot. You know, I spend a lot of times in the outdoors and nature hiking. And I'm very comfortable in my own skin today.
Yeah.
I used to hate my own company. I used to hate how I look, hate how I talked. You know, everything about myself, I couldn't stand. I despised myself. I could never understand. Every relationship I was in, I was so insecure because I could never understand why anyone want to go out with me.
Yep.
Any friendships I had, what do these people see like me? Every job I had, I thought I was underqualified. You know, it's so much self-hatred. Like, it was mad, you know, and I needed to unlearn all these things I had about myself, you know, and for that, again, it was going into that inner critic. And I think when, you know, for me, getting comfortable in my own skin and learning to spend time with me, I'll not need to keep numbing stuff down and listening to the mad head. And, you know, because like someone said to me, what does fear stand for? What do the letters fear stand for? It's false evidence appearing real.
I just said that in another podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was so, like, it blew my mind when I heard it.
And the other one is like future events appearing real.
Future what?
Future events appearing
future
real.
Future events. Ah, okay.
I was thinking worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Mark Twain has that quote, you know, that he's been through a lot of disasters in his life and thankfully most of them have never happened. And it's like saying that we can concoct all these scenarios and situations that we're listening to the emotions of everything. So we feel that, oh, this got to happen or that's got to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it doesn't actually, 90% of the time, 99% of the time, none of that stuff ever happens. Like, you know, so again, I think it's all about outlook, you know what I mean? How we view ourselves, how we view the world. And, you know, if I don't see value in myself or worth in myself, I'll date people that don't see value or worth in myself.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm the dancing monkey up on stage. Am I good enough now? Mm-hmm. Do you love me now? It's 2 o'clock. Do you still love me? It's raining outside. Do you still love me? Constantly need this validation. Oh, nobody likes. She's changed the TV channel. She's going to break up with me today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this massive fucking insecurity, whereas like if you're able to kind of be in a relationship and not worrying about whether it works out or not and being able to just trust and be in love,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you enjoy it more than being on edge because I'm afraid I'll get abandoned, I'm afraid I'll get broken up with, and you know, and then that just leads to really unhealthy toxic relationships because your signal is like, oh, you know, she texts me but she only gave me 1x. Yesterday she gave me 3 X's at the end of the text, you know, and now that must mean she's gonna, you know, she's
in your head,
a wild way to be, like, it's not a way to live or it's not a way to love.
No, I get a feeling like that you're really content with who you are now in this day and age, that you've worked so hard to kind of get to the point where you know yourself like the back of your hand. Whereas before, you didn't have that sense of self, that you didn't know who you were, and that there was that internal dialogue that was, like you said, pure hatred. And, you know, you weren't kind to yourself. You weren't gentle with yourself. You were pure lost.
Yeah, like for me, what it is, I stopped taking life so serious.
Yeah.
I remember one day sitting down in my tent and I looking up at the stars. Mm-hmm. And then it hit me. We're on a rock that's floating through space.
Yeah.
We're these sophisticated, evolved apes.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, like, and we're just worried about materialism or how many likes we have on Instagram or how bit fast a car is. And these things are all taking away our peace of mind. And it's like, I was sat there going, like, does no one else think how wild it is that we exist and we're here and we're conscious? Mm. Like, you know, and our body is what we're here in this earth for 80, 90 years, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
You know, and then where do we go? You know what I mean? And again, Mark Twain has that quote, I was dead for millions of years before I was born, so I'm not worried about that. And like, I have these real deep thoughts that take me out of that, of the human condition, that we're not human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. Mm-hmm. And when I can see stuff like that, I kind of like, it stops me from getting, hold on, it doesn't really matter if I look a certain way or I own a certain amount of money or I have a certain car, because it's all kind of...
Well, you're a miracle.
We're all miracles. Like, yeah. You know, and it's like a dog is upset because if you see a little dog and he got all upset because he lost his tennis ball, you'd be like, don't buddy, pal, get you another tennis ball. And maybe there's higher intelligence looking at us because we lost our car, we lost our phone, and we lost relationships. Like, don't worry, man, it's not a big deal. It's only a bleeding tennis ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we look at it that way, it's like, why do we take life so serious? Like, you know?
It's all conditioning.
It's all, like, if you're in your deathbed, 80 years of age, and you could look back to yourself there, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, if I was on my deathbed, I would say, don't worry about all the things that you worried about because it doesn't matter. It didn't matter. And you wasted time thinking about it instead of spending time either with yourself, discovering yourself more, or time with people that you loved.
And what would you do differently now?
What would I do differently? I'm a bit of an overthinker. So like you mentioned about like having to rewire and reframe your words, like how you speak to yourself. I definitely like have a better way of talking to myself, for sure. Like the language, like the words, or in, you know, I don't use negative words as much. I kind of have to flip it. The inclination is let's go negative first and then go, well, that wasn't really nice, was it? And then flip it and go, well, how could you say that to yourself, but in a better way that makes you feel less like you're not enough, for example. So, it's definitely, words are important. How you use words in the world is really important because, like you said, if you put it out there, it'll come back. So if you're going to use appropriate language that is focused on healing, focused on positivity, focused on just the want for change, then all that will come back, I think.
I love that. What are some of your favourite words?
Some of my favourite words is, like you mentioned, gratitude, to be grateful. Like I mentioned that I talk about gratitude with like a lot of students. But I also understood it like better when I was younger and I used to kind of have a diary and I'd be like, dear diary, oh God, Jesus, this happened and that happened. And it was all dramatic and it was all focusing on just drama. And then I remember Oprah Winfrey and Lady Gaga, and Lady Gaga's mom talked about a gratitude journal. And it actually definitely shifted the way I speak and also the way I journal, because now if your mindset is going to focus on positivity, then, you know, there was less drama in my life. Like I can honestly say it's a lot quieter. There's no drama in my life. There's no, like, I don't want to fuel it either. It's not easy because we're only human as well. So sometimes, you know, if you're having a little bit of a tiff with like maybe family or friends, it's not easy. But I think it's important to use mindful language. So gratitude is massive.
Yeah, I love that. And that's the thing, you can flip every word. Like, what does fail stand for? First attempt in learning.
Yeah.
What does end stand for? Effort never dies.
Yeah.
What does no stand for? Next opportunity.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, and that's all it is. Like, failure is just learning. You win or you learn. Mm. And that's what I believe in life, you know. And again, it's back to mindset again, how we look at things. You know what I mean? We got, you know, do we have another opportunity or do we have a failure that we're like beating ourselves up over? We're going to be a victim about it. We're going to say, right, what's the action I can take here? Yeah. What I kind of use this as a learning opportunity or fuel to get me to the place where I want to go.
Yeah. Well, wow. That was amazing. Firstly, like, you are a fantastic person. And so, like, you give 1,000% of yourself, and I can feel that. I can feel your energy from the conversation. And I think the people who are listening will actually feel that connection through the podcast as well, because there's so much insight to, like, you know, people have so much fears these days. They need to hear that, you know, fear is pure nonsense, that you need to lead with a heart space. You need to kind of get out of your head into your heart and move in the world where, you know, we only have the present moment. We only have now, and we have the choice to change, like you have done in your life as well. So the choice to change, I think for me, it's a big one, because I never thought at the beginning that we had choices. But I think when, you know, if you're looking at your younger version of you, your 14-year-old version of you, did that person have choice back then? Did it feel like I had a choice?
I had choice, but didn't have insight or wisdom. Mm. You know, and yeah. I think as you get older, is that a quote or a poem or a song where I wish I knew then what I know now?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, we did have choice, but we didn't have the insight.
The wisdom, yeah.
Or the wisdom. And I think wisdom comes from painful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was saying, what's the difference between knowledge and wisdom? And knowledge is, you know, that a tomato is a fruit, whereas wisdom is not putting in a fruit salad. You know, and it's a simple one, but it's an effective one, you know, that as we grow and like that, we learn about ourselves, we make them mistakes or them failures, or driving on my way out here, I took a few wrong turns, you know, and this, the next time I'm out here, I won't take as many wrong turns because I learned the first time. And I think sometimes we need to touch the stove in life, because for me, the only way I really changed in life was when I hit them rock bottoms. Them low points in life, because otherwise I was just kind of going, and I think that's again back to the Stoic philosophy of pain is a pleasure. You know, that pain can move mountains.
Yeah,
you know, that discomfort can move mountains. You know, and we can make great changes in life. You know, but it's not always comfortable to sit in and be in when you're in the midst of it. Like, you're in the middle of that storm, and you know, you just want it to end, and sometimes you can get very lonely or, you know, overwhelming. But yeah, and I always think if I could go back to my 14-year-old self, I'd tell myself to be more compassionate.
Mm.
But again, you're that age, you just can't receive that type of information.
Yeah.
You won't be able to, what's, like, what?
Yeah, what is, about? Yeah.
And then it's like, would I go back and change this? Or would I go back and say that? But it's like, sometimes you have to let people just live their life.
Yeah.
But and saying that, there was times in my life where I felt really dark, in a really dark place. I'd love to just go back and give myself a hug and give myself and say, it's going to be all right. And now what I do when I'm in dark place, if I'm ever going through that period when I'm in a dark place, I always feel like, oh, there's a column in the near future right now that's in a great place, going, I'd love to go back and give me a hug right now and say, look, man, there's a miracle just around the corner, bro. Just around the corner. Don't quit before that miracle happens. And that's what it is, you know. Sometimes when we're going through that turbulent and rocky patch, you know, there's a beautiful room, the Tupac says, you know, through every dark night comes a brighter day. You know, and we are going through the rough or the tough, you know, there's a nice, beautiful sunrise just around the corner. So whatever situation's going on in our lives, just have that bit of hope. And what's hope stand for? I'm full of the, full of the quotes. Hope's acronyms, that's the word. Hope stands for hold on, pain ends.
Hold on, pain ends.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, and that's like one of my favourite quotes, because it's so relevant. You know, because sometimes we forget when we're feeling low, we forget what it's like to feel good. We forget what it was like when I was feeling happy, I was feeling content, and you know, I was noticing the stars and I was smelling the flowers and I was appreciating the sunrise. I was in a great place and everyone was amazing. But then when I'm in a low place, everyone's wrecking me head and traffic jams and bills and rubbish and bad news on the news. And I forget what it was like when I was happy that time. You know, and it's like that hot, cold paradigm where we forget what it's like on the opposite end. So just hang on, like hang in there, and like tough times do end. And I know it's like a cliche, but it's really hard to believe that when you're in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hope comes in many different forms. It could be someone saying something kind to you. Could be a book, a podcast, you know. Could be, for me, like could be a Robin, you know what I mean? Remember, I was doing an Ironman there a few months ago, and the day before, I remember the night before, I couldn't sleep. I was having a mad panic attack, and you know, I was going to like pull out. And I remember just sitting out on the balcony in, you know, the apartment in Barcelona, it's where it was on, and just sitting there and just like, getting a bit teary. And I was thinking of my dad and thinking of a few of friends that passed away. And next thing, this little Robin just landed right beside me, and that anxiousness just left instantly. And that was just like hope comes like in many different forms. And, you know, I went in and fell asleep, got 3 hours sleep, and I smashed the Ironman, first one I ever done. And the next day I went and got a tattoo of a Robin on my arm. And
oh, fab.
Yeah, just because I'm an extreme, like that's, it's an ADHD thing, you know, it's like all or nothing.
Yeah.
But, and that's the thing, like hope comes in different forms. But if you're watching out for these things, you'll see them. You know what I mean? You can't hear it, you can hear it, you can't see it, you can see. And if we watch out for these things and open my ears, I'll hear it. Like, you know what I mean? But again, it's about, you know, allowing yourself to hear and see these things. And it is. It's a good life. It depends what, like My life's so simple today. You know, I woke up this morning, I got a C-dip, I went to the gym, you know, then I went to work, and, you know, and like I read the daily reflections and a 12-step recovery book, and then I read the daily stoic and it's a daily philosophy book, and, you know, I might listen to a motivational podcast, one from Greco Studios, obviously, and, you know, and yeah, and just, I live life extremely simple today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Everything that makes me feel good, it is in abundance out there. I don't need to order online. I don't need to go searching for it. I don't need to snort it. I don't need to drink it. I don't need to eat it. You know, it's getting in a cold sea. It's doing an ice bath. It's meditating. Mm-hmm. It's doing a sauna. It's training. It's exercising. It's journaling. It's meditating. All the stuff that's free and accessible and in abundance. And if you can measure it, it won't fix you. If you can touch it or feel it, it won't heal it. You know? And that's the thing, it's an inside job, you know, and today I'm starting to feel like Brown Thomas on the inside and Brown Thomas on the outside, you know, and that for me is like life beyond my wildest dreams. If you said to me a few years ago, well, what's a life beyond your wildest dreams? It's like, oh, I'd be doing an interview on like Oprah Winfrey, or I'd be driving a Ferrari around the Beverly Hills, you know. Life beyond my wildest dreams today is of peace of mind.
Yeah.
And my family are healthy, you know, my head's in a good place. Mm-hmm. I like who I am today. You know, and it's as simple as that. And that for me is gold. It's invaluable. To get to a place where you can sleep at night. You don't have a million thoughts racing through your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wake up in the morning and you want to get out of bed and you look forward to the day ahead. You're not riddled with self-pity and depression, not wanting to get out of bed because you've just this dark cloud over you.
Yeah.
It follows you everywhere you go. And the reason I'm as grateful as I am today, because I know what it's like not to have them simple rites of passages where you have everything and be in the midst of this darkness. This grey cloud that followed me into my nice car. This grey cloud that followed me into my nice relationship.
Mm-hmm.
This grey cloud that was hanging over me when I checked my bank balance and seen lots of money. And I still had this grey cloud. That makes no sense, because society tells me if I attain all these things, I got all things, I feel a million times better. Like, mm-hmm. And I didn't.
Well, you look great. Okay. So whoever supports you in like all your like.
Turkey.
Yeah.
Turkey.
He's Turkey gone to Turkey team. To come.
I have to go over and get the hair done.
No, you look.
And the cauliflower ears.
No, but you're literally glowing from just health, great mindset, great energy. Like, and the fact that you're super content. That, like, that actually just brings me a lot of joy.
Thanks, Julian.
Just to hear that.
And back to you. Like, you have just lovely, warm friendliness, and you have a lovely smile.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're a gem. You're a diamond.
Thank you. Diamond. So we're going to end the podcast by saying just thank you so much for your time and the amazing insight that you've been able to give us, because I know the listeners are going to really bowl over everything that you've given to them today and to me as well. You know, you've been very vulnerable, and I think that's the power of the podcast, really, just the vulnerability and the struggles and the stories. People will totally connect and relate. And I'm looking forward to, like, catching up with you in the near future as
awesome.
Well.
Can't wait.
Cheers.
Thanks so much, Julie.
Thank you so much for listening today with myself and Colm. If anything resonates with you on this podcast, please reach out to our socials at thelonelygal_ or the email lonelygalpodcast@gmail.com. And for Colm, it's @Colm_Doolin. I just want to thank you guys sincerely and all the guests that we've had on this podcast and episode for their personal journey and sharing so much of themselves with me, with you, the listeners. I really, truly hope to hear from you guys again. But for now, love and light, and stay safe and well.